Each year in sports, we witness amazing athletic accomplishments. Records are shattered and championships are won. And the highly paid analysts get to sit back and tell us what to think about it. Who's listening to us, the fans? This is Talk Back, where real fans engage in heated debates about the world of sports as we see it. Welcome to the show.
It's been a long time coming, but we finally put this thing together. I know, Justin, you and I have been talking about this for what seems like months and months, but I'm excited to finally sit down with you and put a podcast together, because it seems like my thumbs and fingers are way too tired to text out the amount of arguments that we have about sports. So this is Eric talking now. And
this is Justin. And thank God we have unlimited texting, because as things happen, as we have gotten into our careers and we have kids and families, the only time we can find the ability to talk is through text. And we seem to wear out each other's phones. Thank God there's emojis now, so we don't kill each other. We actually know when we're joking, when we're trying to be sarcastic. So that has helped us much, but this is a much better forum to be able to actually talk about sports and talk about it the way we want to talk about it as fans.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, because I know we had our growing pains with texting about sports back and forth. We're both in our mid-30s. We've had a lot of fun through our minor careers in sports. I was a PGA of America golf pro for a few years, so I dabbled in professional sports briefly, but since then just been a regular worker, a surgical sales rep, if you will, and that love of sports just never really left me.
Yeah, the love of sports, I think we both had, even as college roommates. That's where we really found sports together. We were NASCAR fans, football fans, and this is before the days you could just pop on the TV and watch every game. We actually had to work at this, and dealing with slow internet speeds and things like that. We could just go back in our dorm room and talk, go play sports, talk while we're doing it, go to a restaurant, talk about sports. But we never really got a chance as we developed our careers. It was just much harder, but we've always loved sports. For me, it was basketball. I took that into my with a sports management degree. Worked with the Sixers some as I got going, but they don't pay you any money. That's kind of the problem with these, and it's something we can even talk about further on, of how sports delves in their money, how they treat some of their other people that work within the organization, and that whole experience they have with fans. But we've both been involved with sports, playing, coaching. We have kids now. But the fact is, we have opinions, but they're just what we see, what we feel. We're not getting paid to have our opinions. And that's something that you turn on any sport, you turn on something on ESPN Radio, Fox Sports, all these guys are in bed with the major sports leagues. They're going to have a bias whether they want to or not, because they have bosses. And if your boss has a contract tied to the NBA, the NFL, do you really think they're going to give you an honest opinion?
No,
ESPN
not at all.
Wants that LeBron interview. They are not going to be critical of something he does, or Russ or Harden or any of those guys. Same with the NFL. If it's concussion protocol, anything dealing with that, they're going to not cover that story maybe to the way that we think, because they don't want to pay the price for it with the league. You think back to ESPN when they had Playmakers. It's a great show. Basically,
yes.
it was the first show. Ballers.
Yeah.
But the ESPN bosses did not like that, because the NFL called them and said, let's get rid of that.
Too honest.
Yeah. Yeah. A little too close to home there.
Well, you did a phenomenal job of explaining the genesis of this show. Like we said, we're just kind of regular guys, regular jobs, and we have a love of sport. We have a small background in sport when we both came out of college. But, just the opportunity to talk sports with another true fan is what I really enjoy. I know you and I do it pretty much all week long, and we cover really just about any sport that's in the mainstream. I know we don't get into cricket or water polo too much.
Well, you don't ever want to talk curling with me, so
I think even in our logo here, we put a basketball, a football, a golf ball, a racing tire, things like that. So, those are the things that drive us on the weekends and throughout the week that we follow. And like you said, texting back and forth, it can be tiring. You can't always get emotion, and at least this allows us to really dive into some of the subjects that we want to talk about, or we wear our thumbs out on. And hopefully, you know, the listeners enjoy that as well. And as we develop here, we would love to take questions and, you know, emails from listeners and really dig into those, because the whole idea of this is just two real fans sitting down having a real debate about sports. And I think you explained it very, very well. We don't answer to anybody. So, you know, our opinions, they may upset people, they may not, but it's really not going to matter at the end of the day.
Exactly. I mean, this is just what you really want with fans. When you're watching a game, what's your pure reaction? When you read an article, what's your pure reaction? It's not based on how it's going to impact your job, how it's going to impact your career. We really don't care. We're just having fun talking sports. Wherever this takes us, if we just talk to each other, no one listens. It's still fun for us because we do it anyway. So why don't we do it and have fun with it and just give genuine reactions to things? You know, there's going to be times where we agree or times we disagree, but we're not going to fake arguments like you see on the show.
And hopefully,
we don't sit before and pick a topic and say, okay, you take this side, I'll take this side, even though I don't believe it, just to make content.
Yeah, that's driving me a little nuts on the ESPN and Fox Sports One, and the two contrarian opposing
sides. You don't like
first fake? No, not at all. So this will be I like to talk sports with you because I consider you a pretty deep thinker as far as sports go. I think you have a lot of knowledge, and I don't know that I have so much knowledge, but I do watch a lot of sports, I do follow a lot of sports, and I definitely have opinions.
I think what we try to be is logical, that we don't. We just have a logical opinion of what we say. We try to use common sense. We try to use statistical-based evidence. But we just try to be logical in our opinions. We don't think what happens in the first quarter is what is a person's career is going to be. That's the biggest difference between us. And that's the biggest drawback you see to Twitter is a guy can have 0 points and a half or 50, and he's either the greatest or the worst. They don't even look at his full career, his full season. Everything is instantaneous.
So here we are, episode one of Talk Back, and just wanted to, you know, introduce ourselves a little bit, tell you a little bit about why we're doing this, and so we've covered that. So, Justin, just tell us who are some of your, you know, growing up, some of your favorite athletes of all time in any sport, just so the listeners, you know, people can get to know us a little bit.
Well, I'm a devout Broncos fan, have been since I was little, so of course John Elway, to me, was my favorite football player growing up. Felt like he did so much with so little for years. He just always seemed to lay it on the line. So I was a huge Elway fan in terms of NFL. NBA, it was Jordan. You know, I was lucky enough to grow up right through Jordan's best years, probably the best years, I think, of the NBA in terms of being able to watch it from a standpoint of physicality, of really watching the game. I mean, today's game is great because there is more action, there is more scoring, there is more openness to the game. But just from watching rivalries, knowing that when you see the Knicks and Bulls, Pacers, Bulls, you were going to see physicality.
Yeah.
And that was probably my two biggest guys from a baseball standpoint. It's probably more of a Ken Griffey Jr., Cal Ripken, really liked those guys. So that was, for me, it was always more about the NFL, NBA. Those always stood out to me. What about you?
Yeah, first of all, I totally agree. A little bit about me. In seventh grade, eighth grade, I got cut from my basketball team in a little town. So I knew at that point that basketball wasn't for me. Not to mention in seventh and eighth grade, I'm only 5'11" now. I think I might have been 5'1", if barely 5 foot in seventh and eighth grade. And so as much as I loved basketball, I knew it wasn't for me. And that was hard because, as you touched on, that era of basketball was phenomenal. I was absolutely a Michael Jordan fan, a Bulls fan. I followed just about every playoff game that they were in from, you know, 1989 to his first and second retirement. So that had a big impact on me. I would definitely say Michael Jordan was someone I looked up to in that time frame. In the late 90s, a guy by the name of Tiger Woods. You ever hear of him?
He came still around?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. but yeah, he came around and really molded golf into something completely different. And that's, you know, I'd be lying if I said that he didn't play a part in my interest in golf as sort of a interesting and cool sport. So Tiger Woods for sure. Nowadays, if we're talking modern athletes, as you know quite well, I will, you know, lick the sweat off LeBron James's jerseys when he's done. I absolutely love LeBron James. I think in this era of the NBA, he's 100% my favorite athlete. And then just, you know, kind of the flip side of that coin, we just talked about Tiger. I'd have to say, you know, golf's in a really actually good spot. And I'm a big Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Dustin Johnson, those guys.
Cool.
All right. Well, that's a little bit about us. Let's get into it. We want to talk now a little bit about the NBA MVP race of the 2016-2017 season. And this was a heated year. I don't remember, at least in recent memory, I don't remember a season where you really had three to four. Now, we're going to talk about Kawhi Leonard being the fourth, but really three to four strong candidates for MVP that left the discussion, I think, wide open. You and I have had some good debates on this, so let's hit that right now.
The first thing I think about is, you know, this year they revamped the voting. So now we're down to basically 100 independent writers that are involved in the voting. They basically took the team, announcers, anyone associated with the team out because of their bias. So we have 100 guys. I think the biggest thing before we even get into that is it seems like all 100 of them have a different opinion of what the MVP award actually is. And to me, that's frustrating because I don't know what they're actually looking for. So are they saying the MVP is the best player on the best team? Or is the MVP the player that's had the best statistical year? Is it a lifetime achievement type award? So I've heard guys say, well, James Harden's had two great years. Steph kind of took it from him last year, so he's in line for it, just like a few years ago was with KD. So I feel like, I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but it seems like every guy I listen to has a different opinion of what the MVP award is, and I think that changes the conversation.
No, I think that's a great point. And these guys, as we look at their statistics from this year, it was career years, really, in a lot of different ways for each one of them. Now, when maybe we should tell the listeners who we—I mean, they may know—but who we consider to be the top four in the voting process that we are aware of. I don't even think Steph Curry's in that conversation, but we may be surprised. But the guys that we know of: Russell Westbrook, James Harden, LeBron James, and Kawhi Leonard are the four that, when we say the four, that's who we're talking about. And I completely agree that, you know, we kind of have four different circumstances because LeBron has a couple. And then you have, you know, Kawhi is only 6 years in the league. And then you have a guy like Russell Westbrook, who is flying solo for the first time in his career. James Harden, who not necessarily flying solo, but definitely the new leader of a different team, the Houston Rockets. So, it's really hard to compare. Is it a career thing? Is it, well, it's this guy's turn, or are we going to look at this year's stats? So, I definitely wanted to dig into this year's stats though, because there are some interesting numbers to look at and consider, and really different directions that we could take that may or may not be right or wrong. But, like we talked about before, we don't have to cater to what, you know, the NBA wants us to say or whose turn it is now. Can really dig into this and say, well, I think it should be this guy, and here's why.
I totally agree. So what do you think when you think MVP, what comes to mind for you in terms of what you're looking at? Like, how, when you look at these four guys, I think it's safe to say these guys have separated themselves from a statistical standpoint. So I think statistics play into it. For me, I look at over the course of the entire year of what they've been able to do. Like a guy like Paul George, his last 20 games were phenomenal. He drug the Pacers into the playoffs. But the first 60 games of the year, there was talk about, is he going to get traded? What's wrong with him? They limped into the All-Star break. I look at Damian Lillard, another guy, phenomenal last part of the year after he came back from the ankle injury. It was very slow, down statistics. The Blazers were kind of stuck. He took off, but he didn't do it for the whole year. So I think these four guys separated themselves because they did it for the entire season. What do you think about that?
Yeah, actually, as far as a whole season is concerned, because you're absolutely right, the end of the season brings on, you know, new names. And even if you look at Kawhi Leonard, what he did in the last part of the season, even that one stretch that he had about, 10 to 20 games remaining in the season, I feel like that rose his name to the top, maybe even more than it should have, because if we look at his stats in the rebounds and assists category, it's really not even close to James, Harden, and Westbrook. And so as far as that's concerned, I think he got a little bit of attention at the end of the year. And so to your question, what does MVP really mean? And most valuable player? Well, first of all, most valuable player to whom? To the team or to right. the league as a whole? And I've always gone into this, you know, my whole life, whether it be baseball, football, basketball, thinking that it was a league-wide thing. And so a lot of these people who say, well, Westbrook was playing with nobody, and so he's absolutely the most valuable player because he was dragging along four, you know, has-beens or never has-beens on an OKC team that was sort of ravaged over the offseason. Well, yeah, I get that, but that also feeds into part of what he was able to accomplish. And so there's sort of opposing sides to that argument there. James Harden and no doubt LeBron James had more talent surrounding them, LeBron for sure, with the big three in Cleveland. And so when you look at, now, of course, I'm biased. I'm a LeBron fan. We've already established that. But I was more than willing to talk about Westbrook and Harden as candidates. But when I look at what LeBron did statistically in an offense that is surrounded by Kyrie Irving, one of the best guards in the game, and to some degree, Kevin Love. I think he's a bit overrated personally. But even, J.R. Smith and Shumpert, they're certainly getting their shots. And then Thompson's certainly getting his rebounds. So the fact that LeBron is averaging career highs, and that's actually a true statement, career highs in rebounds, assists, and field goal percentage. And I'll get into field goal percentage in a minute. But what do you think about that as far as, is it a league thing? Is it a team thing? I mean, you asked me the same question. I said, I think it's a league thing. But how do you relate that to what they meant to their teams and how their statistics really played into their teams?
I think you have to have a combination and blend the two. So I think first of all, in order to be an MVP candidate, you have to be on a winning team, whether that means playoffs or not. I think you have to be on a winning team, and I think you have to have done it for a sustained period of time, which is the full season. I think we touched on that earlier. So I look at that. I think for me, when I look at Kawhi Leonard, he's probably by far of these four players, the best defensive player of the four. So I don't think we can shortchange him on that. But to me, with Kawhi, the biggest issue that I think for me, he finished fourth in this was because there's too many games where you'd watch Kawhi and go, I think I'm watching maybe the best player in the league. And the next game you go, this guy's an MVP candidate. There's too many games where he popped and didn't do much. And I don't know if that's the Spurs system where some of those games, they just dominated teams and they didn't need Kawhi to do as much. So he didn't necessarily have to have a lot of rebounds or assists or points. But there was too many games for me where I just felt like he didn't carry the Spurs. He would have a great game, then he'd have a down game.
And to your point with the up and down, in a league that was, you know, shooting toward triple doubles, it's the highest triple double rate in the history of the league, and he wasn't even close with rebounds and assists per game. His season averages were 5.8 rebounds a game and 3.5 assists per game, and those both in those categories were far lower than the other three.
And the fact that he missed 8 games and the Spurs were 7-1 in those 8 games, to me, I don't think, you know, I think as game 6 gears up and you start to wonder if Kawhi is going to be okay with the ankle, if he's going to play, I'm sure the Spurs want him in there because they're not going to think they're just going to waltz in and beat the Rockets in Houston. But the fact that they were 7-1, you know, to me tells me that what really does the regular season mean for the Spurs? So I just looked at Kawhi as a guy that he didn't need to do as much for his team to be successful. Mm-hmm. And like you said, with the rebounds and assists, even though he is a great defensive player, it just felt like he was fourth on this list for me. So sure. I think we both were kind of in concert with that, where we just agreed that, you know, Kawhi's getting there. I think next year he could certainly be a viable candidate, but I don't necessarily know if he makes everybody around him better. He certainly can shut down anyone that he's up against. He's probably the best two-way player in the game, but is that enough to beat guys who were close to averaging a triple-double? I don't know.
So speaking of two-way players, because we know famously what LeBron can do when trailing, you know, an offense in transition. His block from behinds is becoming a famous thing. I mean, he just did it again the other night before they swept again. And, you know, that's really an important thing for me because it doesn't always show up on a stat sheet. And that's one of the reasons I'm a big fan of his. So I got to say this. One of the things that always has bothered me about Westbrook and Harden is the defensive end of the floor. I think they get a lot of accolades, as they should, for their offensive acumen and their star power, but they really don't show up. I was actually looking at an article in the Washington Post that was written in April, so last month, but near the end of the season, as they're kind of looking through this stuff. And I didn't realize this, but we like the fact that Westbrook had so many rebounds as a guard, and you kind of dig into why that is. Unfortunately, Steve, you know, Allen on his team said, well, a lot of times we step back and let him get the rebound. That kind of bothered me, but even still, he gets the rebound. He starts driving the floor. Two things happen. One, he led the league in turnovers in transition, which no one really seems to talk about that. And then the other thing is, if he's looking for a rebound or that type of thing, he doesn't play defense. And so I just feel like it was a very statistical position game for him, like a game of chess, to see how he could get a triple-double every game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I think that could be a league-wide thing, too, where I think, you know, for example, you go to the Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland, the scoreboard is nearly the size of the floor. And you look at those guys during a timeout, and they're constantly, their heads are up. I don't know what they're looking at. I mean, I don't know if they're looking at fans or women, but their statistics are clearly up there. Rebounds, assists, fouls, points, all that stuff is right above the board. And so I think when those guys start to get close, I think back to a Saturday night game with Dwayne Wade, where Jimmy Butler had a triple-double. Wade was one rebound short. A ball comes off. He's standing there for a rebound. The backup center comes over his head, takes the ball, and Wade turns around and looks at him. So he clearly knew he was one rebound short of a triple-double. Yeah. So I think all those guys really know. The thing that stood out to me with Westbrook was he had 42 triple-doubles. That set the record. The Thunder were 33-9 in games he had a triple-double.
Okay.
So to me, it feels like the Thunder needed every single stat that Russ had just to win games. So I think for his standpoint, there are times where I think people have talked about the big guy stepping back, letting the guards, but you don't really know if that's more of a statistical standpoint or if the ball comes off to our point guard and the other team's backs are turned and he gets a running start, how much more time does he save versus Steven Adams catching the ball, pivoting, finding Russ, and the defense is, you know, 5-6 steps further back the court than when Russ gets it, turns around, and he can get them in transition, which is what the Thunder needed because they weren't hitting any threes with that team.
Yeah, and let's not discount that some of this is not James Harden and Russell Westbrook's fault, because we're now in the Steph Curry NBA. And what I mean by that is over the last 3 to 4 years, the long ball is being shot at an enormous rate from just about all teams, which leads to longer rebounds. So a lot of the rebounds are going over the center's head, over the, you know, even over the forward's head, and getting back into the backcourt where the guards are. So certainly 2 to 3 to 4 rebounds a game are getting to the guards simply because of the way that basketball is being played as a whole. And I'm not going to fault, you know, a guard for that. And even in this category, you've got, you know, Westbrook and Harden are both guards, a shooting guard and a point guard. And Kawhi Leonard and LeBron James are both forwards. So that's kind of a neat aspect of this, too, is that the stats are really lining up kind of interestingly, considering that two guys play one position and two guys play a different position.
I think the biggest thing you're seeing is just a change in the NBA. The first is ball-dominant point guards. And I think you're going to see that in the draft this year, where it's going to be very point guard heavy at the top because everybody's looking for the next Russ, Harden, John Wall, guys that can just take over a game and dominate the ball. I think Russ, Harden, and Wall, I think they hold the ball something like the ball's in their hands for like 9 actual minutes of a game. They're just ball-dominant players. They have extremely high usage rates, and it seems like teams sort of need that guy. LeBron, and then the second part is what LeBron basically has brought, what the Greek Freak has brought, is basically positionless basketball. They can play 1 through 5.
Yeah.
So they can do anything. they can fill up the stat sheet every single night because, I mean, you know, try to play DraftKings, for example, with Giannis. You don't know what he is. He's a point guard. He's a shooting guard. He's a small forward. You don't know what you're playing with him. But, and even when you watch him, you're like, what position does this guy play? He brings the ball up the floor. He can do anything. He's in the post. He's setting guys up. He's guarding their center. He's blocking shots. LeBron does the same thing. So I think it's almost back to the Magic Johnson days where you had a guy that could play all five positions. And you're starting to see more of these guys that can do that along with having ball dominant point guards. So I think from a statistical standpoint, the next couple years, they're going to be all over the place because you're going to have a guy that's 6'11" in Giannis who could easily do what Russ has. He's probably the next guy that could easily average a triple-double and probably could put three or four blocks, even more in that as well.
How do you feel about, and we'll only spend a little bit more time on this before going into our lightning round, but how do you feel about the efficiency part of the argument? And, you know, again, this plays into my favor as a LeBron fan, but I also sort of counter defense to what I'm going to say. I feel that there's a reason for this, but LeBron's efficiency was 55% from the floor. That is far higher than the other three. In fact, Westbrook was 43% and Harden was 44%. Now, part of that is because LeBron is down underneath a lot more than those guys are. Even late in the season, the Cavs unveiled him in the five. And so it was actually funny. Three playoff games ago, I think they showed his average distance from the hoop on a make was like 2 feet or something like that. But when you go to the efficiency category on any of the stats websites, the top 15 is basically filled with 13 centers and two forwards, one of them being LeBron James, one of them being Kevin Durant. And that's partly because they can get inside a lot more. But does that matter to you at all that if you're a Russell Westbrook and you're shooting 43%, that's also a lot of times that you're, you know, taking shots and missing that either stalls the offense or turns, you know, what I mean by stalls the offense is he misses the shot and the other team gets the defensive rebound right away and boom, you're down the other side of the floor. It's hard to get momentum that way. Or is that just the nature of the game with guards these days?
I think in the regular season, it's not as important because simply if you look at the makeup of their team, you would expect looking at what Russ has to work with and just the way they're set up, he's going to dominate the ball. I mean, there was games he was shooting, you know, 40 plus shots and would make, you know, in the teens. So he, and with all the turnovers you alluded to earlier, he's not an efficient player, but who else do you want to shoot the ball? Do you really want Doug McDermott shooting it? The guy the Bulls gave up on. I mean, that roster is without Russ is horrible.
Sure.
I mean, I think the Brooklyn Nets would laugh at that roster. I mean, that is a bad roster without him. So I think part of Russ's level of efficiency is just due to the fact that there's no one else. The problem, though, is when you start to watch him in the playoffs and when the game's on the line and it's Russ going 1-on-5, that's where the efficiency really shows up. Mm-hmm. And that's where you're seeing why LeBron and the Cavs are 8-0, because in closeout situations, even in four close games versus the Pacers, they just did a better job of closing the Pacers out because they were more efficient, because LeBron knew he didn't need to take every shot. And to your point, he was getting good shots when he took them. You know, even thinking back to game five with Harden and the Spurs, they played excellent ball up until the Spurs made a run and got it close. And then it was Harden just going 1-on-5, shooting 30-footers, three turnovers in overtime, extremely inefficient.
Yeah, that really bothered me. I know the voting was already over, but that really bothered me.
That's where the efficiency really shows up. And that's another point I think we touched on was, why is this award just limited to the regular season? They don't do the award show till June 26th after the finals. So if a guy like Russell Westbrook, who looks to be the front runner, wins, well, he hasn't played a game in 2 months. Is he even going to show up? Or he's probably on a beach somewhere.
Yeah, right.
And people are going to be like not even thinking about that. You know, the hope is you're going to get a great Cavs Warriors final. Nobody's going to be thinking about what Russ did in the regular season.
Sure.
So I don't understand why this award isn't more important or they don't do something else to include the playoffs if you're going to wait till after the season to do it. That doesn't make any sense to me because it basically makes it where these guys just are throwing up stats in the regular season And we've already seen what the regular season means to the NBA. It doesn't mean anything. These guys are resting on national televised games. You know, and it's not just that's a whole different topic. Yeah. But the fact is, the regular season is very watered down, and the cream rises with statistics. When we get to playoffs, I really think you start to see the true size of teams, and then their true, really, what is the inefficiency in their game, which is they don't trust their teammates. Russ certainly doesn't do it. Harden should, because his guys had him a lead till late when he just went bananas with the turnovers and just terrible offense.
Yeah, that's.
So I think from that standpoint, the efficiency really shows up late in the playoffs. In the regular season, I don't think it matters as much.
So we've certainly dug into this quite a bit, and it's now time to say, if you had to rank those four guys, and maybe surprise me if there's a fifth guy that I'm not thinking of, but if you had to rank those four guys and hand out the award right now, knowing that the playoffs didn't matter, so you know what bothered me about Westbrook really is irrelevant, right? Because the award was already decided after that, or excuse me, before that. But if you had to rank them, how would you rank them?
Well, I think we touched on it. I go Kawhi 4. For me, I would put LeBron 3. Very close to 3. Oh. Your eyes are going to pop out of your head.
Oh, that
but
hurt.
I think LeBron has better people around him. I think LeBron really had to step his game up because of the Love injury. Kyrie was hurt some. You know, we heard his pleas earlier to the Cavaliers management to get him some more playmakers in, where he really felt like he had to do more. Hopefully, you know, they've been able to cruise through the playoffs, so you wonder if the minutes he's played, when that's going to catch up to him at his age. Maybe not, but you certainly wonder about that. To me, I go, and my MVP would go to Westbrook, and basically over Harden. Harden was a more efficient player, but I think Harden was in a system that really allowed his talents to take over, where, you know, if you take Harden off that team, you still got guys like Patrick Beverley, Trevor Ariza, Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, Clint Capella. You still have some good pieces there.
Yeah.
Mike D'Antoni came in and really revamped that system, which is what the Thunder really need to do, which is we're going to space the floor. We're going to either shoot threes, we're going to get layups, we're going to get to the free throw line, where Russ just didn't have that. But the fact that Russ, not just the triple-doubles, the fact that they were 33-9 when he got a triple-double, to me meant that the Thunder just needed Russ every single night. And if he was able to bring it and elevate them, they could win. If not, they were 13-25 in the games that he didn't.
As much as I want to give the MVP, obviously, to LeBron James this year, he had career highs in rebounds and assists and efficiency. I talked about that. And I think for a guy who's been in the league for 14 years, you know, been to the finals numerous times and won 3 titles, the fact that with all the minutes on his legs that he's putting up career highs with that roster, that meant a lot to me. But I also have to recognize that it's a very emotional thing for me because he is one of my favorite players. So I'll have to wait until he wins a finals MVP again this year. But I'll go Kawhi 4th, Harden 3rd, LeBron 2nd. And as much as I don't want to, because I think the sort of the strategy of how they played basketball as a team really failed them in the first round of the playoffs. This was a regular season award, and really what Westbrook did, whether it was a little bit of a stat grab or not, that's just the NBA these days. And so, you know, he made history, and I think a regular season award, I think you got to give it to Westbrook. All right, this is a part of the show we call the lightning round, and we're just going to fire off a couple of quick random questions. This is totally unprepared. We've got a couple minutes left in the show, and so who's going to, since we're talking basketball, I just want to throw this one out to you. Who's going to win the NBA Finals this year?
Well, it certainly looks like we're in a Warriors-Cavs Finals. I think the thing you always worry about that you've seen crop up with Tony Parker, with Nene, is can these teams get through the semifinals or the Eastern Conference, Western Conference finals healthy? Because I think that will make a big difference in who wins. But I worry some about the minutes on LeBron, that it's going to catch up to him. I also worry that they're not being tested at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I think even what the Warriors did to the Jazz, I think if the Jazz and the Raptors played in the series, the Jazz would beat them in five. I think they're just a better team.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think, and I think the Warriors, you know, looks like they're probably going to end up playing the Spurs. Kind of got to worry, see what happens with Kawhi. But I certainly think that the Spurs or even the Rockets will give the Warriors a better test than the Wizards or Celtics will give to the Cavs. So right now I'm leaning towards the Warriors just because I think when you put out Steph and KD and Klay and Draymond, it's really going to take a big effort from LeBron for probably seven games of 42 to 44 minutes a night to do what they did. So I think it's certainly shaping up to go seven is what it feels like. But I give a slight edge to the Warriors, partly because they're going to have home court advantage, got a little more firepower, a little bit younger.
Yeah, it's hard to believe with all the history of the Celtics and the Lakers and even the Bulls, the dominance that was present in the 80s and 90s, that if it is indeed the Warriors against the Cavaliers, my understanding is that it would be the first time in NBA history that the same two teams faced off 3 years in a row. And so it just always surprised me that never had happened before with the Celtics and the Lakers. It just so happens that they were in different it was always one or the other of them, it seems like, through the 80s and then the Bulls in the 90s, but they always had different opponents or alternating years had different opponents. So I agree with you. My heart's going to give me the Cavs, though. I think from a logic standpoint, I think you're probably right. It's going to be a seven-game series, and I think you might as well flip a coin because it could go either way. I mean, Steph and Klay, probably the best shooters I've ever watched in my lifetime. And so the way that they can rattle off 15 points in 2 minutes or less is really something I've never seen before. But the Cavs, you know, they surprise you. But I agree with you. They have not been tested in this postseason. I think the way they finished the regular season kind of showed us what they were strategically doing, which was, hey, we don't care anymore because we know we're going to fly through these playoffs and it's all about the finals. So it's going to go seven and I'm going to go the Cavs.
All right. So as a Jets fan.
Oh, boy.
What is your team doing at the quarterback position? Or are they just not going to play a quarterback this year? What is the plan there?
I'm starting to think that they aren't going to play a quarterback this year. And I remember after the draft texting you and saying that if they didn't draft a quarterback, I was going to have Woody Johnson give you a call because I was fairly confident the way you're built and the way that you could throw a football that you could probably start for the Jets like tomorrow. I have
Woody Johnson. I want nothing to do with that job.
Yeah.
Just FYI.
Well, apparently no one does. I have no idea. It's been... Yeah, I'm with Mike Greenberg on this. It's been probably the most frustrating 7 to 8 years. Certainly, we had those couple AFC championship runs with, you know, oh gosh, Mark Sanchez. But you know, beyond that, I mean, really, we are a bad team. It's just and I say we like I'm on the team, but they're a bad team. And from what I saw in the draft, they didn't do anything offensively to get any better. You know, they took the best player available to them in the first round when they took the safety. Why in the world did they take safety again in the second round when they still had an opportunity either to take a chance on Dalvin Cook or to take a quarterback? I have no idea. So either they know something about Christian Hackenberg that Penn State and everyone else didn't know, or, you know, who knows, Bryce Petty's going to come out and be amazing this year, or I have no idea. I really don't.
Yeah, it seems like that's a rudderless ship right now, that they really don't know what direction. I mean, I know they're in the division with Tom Brady. I mean, maybe they're just going to play like two linemen and like six safeties and four DBs or some crazy scheme. I don't know what they're doing, but they might be. It might be a long year for you on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, well, it's been it seems like a long decade now. So, well, hey, it was a good first episode. I'm not sure if our sound went well this episode or not. We'll certainly review that, and in future episodes, we'll get that fixed if there were any problems. But I know this was a lot of fun for me, just talking NBA basketball with you. And hopefully next week we can get into some real strong debate on either NASCAR or golf or maybe even what the Bears did in their draft. Who knows?
Whoa. But That's a whole show in itself.
So every week we'll hope to touch on something. You never know what you're going to get. We probably won't touch on soccer too much. I don't know a whole lot about it. I love the game, but I'm just not athletic enough to play.
Yeah, if you want a 30-second podcast, listen to our soccer one.
Yeah, yeah. NHL hockey, you know much about NHL hockey?
No.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to be much help there.
I've got family members who are huge Pittsburgh Penguins fans, and I know the Capitals beat them last night to tie that series 3-3 again. So I think a few of my family members are pretty stressed out right now. But beyond that, I have no idea what's going on in the NHL. So you never know what you're going to get on this podcast, but it's probably going to be in the neighborhood of NBA, NFL, golf, NASCAR, those types of things that we spent a majority of our time watching. And this was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
All right.
We'll do it again next week.